Hey, I had a fun idea for a project as I was going through some of my old collections of magic cards.
Tell me about your fun idea for a project as you were going through some old collections of magic cards.
Well, I had way too many. I think I gave a lot of them to you. And then I'm like...
Now I have way too many.
Yeah. Now I'm tearing decks apart and putting them together. And I had an old four-color deck and an old green-white deck that I smashed into a three-color deck. And wouldn't you know it, the theme of those two decks were very fitting... Uh-oh, the card I was looking for isn't in the front of the deck like I thought it was. Okay, cool. Give me a hot second.
Get the ruffling sound of the cards into the mic so people can tell what you're doing.
I was going to buy a pre-con, but then I thought, why don't I just take the price of a pre-con and buy singles, like I told myself to do, and bring in my husband, one of them, Preston Garvey Minuteman. I got him in the Surge foil. It was like 60 cents.
Sick.
And what he does...
That's the guy.
I don't think we talked about what he does on our show because we had not really played Fallout 4 at the time. But what he does is at the beginning of combat, he creates an enchantment token named Settlement attached to one target land you control. And it taps for any color. And when he attacks, untap each enchanted permanent you control.
That's pretty good, actually. Yeah, that's pretty good, actually.
That's good flavor. Yeah, they did the settlement meme with Preston Garvey.
So now you got your Preston Garvey deck?
Yeah, I got my little Preston Garvey enchantment deck. You know how I love those.
Mm-hmm. Classic archetype.
I'm gay. Of course I love enchantments. That's just kind of how it is. It's weird. Okay, I don't know why. It's not a joke. It kind of is a joke, but it's like, why do we like enchantments so much?
You know, I'm thinking back on it. Yeah, okay, the correlation is there.
We live out our teenage years on a strange foreign planet, trying to explore, colonize, and build society. And I was a teenage exocolonist.
Buds, a storm of buds, and we're going to tell you about how we saved the world.
Welcome to Storm Buds.
What is that, Tom?
I'm sad.
You're sad?
I'm sad.
Are you going through some changes with your body?
My hormones are out of control!
Oh, you're behaving erratically.
Oh! Hi! I'm your...
Hi!
Hello!
Nice to meet ya.
Oh, man. Welcome to Storm Buds. This is the video game variety show where all of the bits and segment names have Final Fantasy XIV jokes.
Man, this is such a thin premise.
It's an incredibly solid, immutable premise. Okay. I'm your host of Light, Jerome Barbatsis, and I'm joined by my co-host of Light, Alexander Hambrock. Say hello.
Hello.
We are, of course, continuing our theme month, Tataru Taru and Company Limited Partnership Incorporated sponsored Pride Month. We are covering all sorts of gay-ass games. Last week we talked about robot lesbians. The week before we talked about...
Hades,
that's right. That was pretty gay. And this week we're talking about I was a teenage exocolonist. Exocolonist. Ha ha, ha ha, ha ha.
We got jokes.
I just had to get it out of the way once. I will try to not do it again because I've done it enough. But this is a game developed by Northway Games and released in 2022. It's a role-playing video game, kind of a roguelike deck builder, sort of.
Heavily visual. I'd almost say more of a visual novel.
More of a visual novel, yeah.
Yeah.
Where you start the game as a 10-year-old, and as you cycle through interactions, daily interactions, you get year to year, and then the game kind of ends on your 20th year, once you stop being a teenager.
You're playing a decade in the life of a child who has been brought along to a colonization mission to an alien planet.
Yes.
And I got to say, out of the gate, I think this game is good. I wish it was great.
I had the same feeling. I thought the gameplay loop of having to sort of, first off, the challenges of having to draw your cards and then having to try and make the highest poker hand light possible thing, reminiscent of sort of a Balatro experience.
Yeah, I thought of that.
Yeah, that was really fun. I thought kind of going around day to day interacting with the various paper cutouts of the villagers of the game was fun. The aesthetic is very charming and quaint. The soundtrack is really good. But I will say, right when the game boots up, the game kind of gives you that, what's it called? It's like the motif of death, or the Requiem of Death. It's the same motif, leitmotif, that is used in the White Lotus and Dead by Daylight. Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, you know, mm-hmm. that White Lotus theme song?
Yes, of course. The White Lotus theme song. It springs immediately to my mind.
Have you not seen it?
No, sorry, I haven't seen White Lotus. No.
Oh, man. I've never been on the other side of this conversation with you. Oh, my God. Wild. All right. Well, that's on the unofficial list then. White Lotus. Real good. But yes, it's a motif that is very, very, very evocative of death. And that kind of tipped me off to what this game was really about.
A lot of death.
It doesn't shy away from the dangers of colonization.
Well,
it
doesn't until it does. And
kind of. But listen, we are going to talk about a lot of the details of this game, and we are going to talk about a lot of the end game details as well, sort of, because everyone's playthrough is going to end up being wildly different, and I'll explain why.
Yeah.
As you're going through your adolescence, you are going to choose what you do with your free time, and you may either build up your skills like strength or organization or biology or your persuasion or your bravery, and you will be able to do different things based on what all your stats are, and you're going to see different events, and different people are going to live and die based on how capable you are as a person in this society, and other various crazy things that are happening. And I think the story itself and the premise itself is really gripping. And I felt that my first playthrough was really great from start to finish. And I think when I was playing, I was like, oh, this is the kind of game I really want to go back in and do the other builds with. But now I've had some time away from it, I'm like, I don't think that's going to happen for
me. Yeah. So I think let's talk about the game in some broad strokes.
Yes.
And if it sounds like something that you think is interesting, I mean, I would recommend checking it out. Like a single playthrough is about 10 hours. Yeah. And then I think we're going to talk about some more specific story stuff in a way that, like, I don't think it's going to ruin the game for anyone who hasn't played it already.
Mm-hmm.
But you can make a decision if you want to engage with that.
Yeah, we'll do what we did with Signalis, where it was just like vaguely talking, mid ad break, and then just spoils collector again.
Yeah. And a comparison I kept having in my head as I was playing this game, I kept comparing it to Citizen Sleeper.
Yes, that is exactly. So if you liked or love Citizen Sleeper, you'll like this game too. It's very similar.
It's very similar with a couple key differences. I think this game has, I think, genuinely more text and more sort of like, you know, events and more different divergent endings and stuff at Citizen Sleeper. It is in some ways a slightly more ambitious game in scope. I think that hurts it a little bit. I think Citizen Sleeper, in being a bit more focused, is able to do some of its little sub stories a little bit more effectively. I think this game is really sprawling in a way that is initially very impressive, but then feels like it starts to get away from them a little bit.
It does feel a little bit paper thin sometimes. The graphics of this game are kind of they're a very cutesy 2D, 3D paper cutout style in the sense of, like, if you had Paper Mario, but it was made by the people that made Calico, the board game.
Yeah, sure. That's a good comparison.
Are you familiar with that?
Very pretty art.
Very
gorgeous,
pretty
art.
Beautiful. And again, music great, aesthetically pleasing game. And I think most of the writing, when it's not so in your face, is pretty crucial, is pretty pretty successful. Not crucial, what? Successful for me. There are a couple of moments in the game that are so directly saying, wow, this is because capitalism is bad.
Well,
maybe you didn't see those in your playthrough. I don't know.
Oh, no, I did. But I got those in part because I specialized in the humanities stuff at the school, because I wanted to dig more into that stuff. I will say the bit that kind of impressed me early on was that stuff felt a little bit not critical is the right word, but it did feel like it was kind of presenting, like, okay, the anti-capitalist stuff is not necessarily the game's perspective. It is the game presenting the perspective of this group of colonists who have left Earth, and those might not be 100% aligned.
Hmm.
like I did kind of appreciate that there was room for sort of like for that to not just be like a background factor, but to kind of be an ideology that people were engaging with right up until the point where I can't keep talking around. I'm going to defer a bunch of end stuff until we get to the spoiler section. But I deliberately did my specialization largely on the sort of like the educational and humanities track because I did want to keep digging more into and learning a lot about.
And the game explicitly tells you to try and focus your skills on certain things and not try to do everything all at once, which I thought was a lie after. After the fact, I've really felt like, because I did, I actually spent up a lot of time in the sciences, as I want to do. I ended up choosing to be really close friends with Tang, very aloof, the very aloof trans woman in this, who's just kind of the very autism coded, a little too hard, but I don't know. Again, whatever. This game doesn't really deal in subtlety, to be frank. Mm-hmm. And so if you're expecting to see a kind of representation, you are going to get it. And I want to also talk about, speaking of character customization, the way in which this game handles character customization, specifically when it comes to gender. We did include this game because it has things like customizable pronouns and a gender slider, which is ideal and cute. I think in practice, there's still only like two, maybe three forms that your character ends up taking. And it's like, yeah, that makes sense. And then the amount of effort for the customizable pronouns, you either get feminine, masculine, or neutral pronouns. I chose the neutral one. And that felt nice. It was nice being a more androgynous on the side of the things in language, and I tried to put myself more androgynous as well, but like it didn't convey super well to me. Something about the whole having to go through every single instance of your character and then change that specific pronoun felt a little, it felt like it was opening the door for attack helicopterism.
Sure,
you know what I mean? Like
someone
this
could have
user
used that
generated
system
content.
And,
but like that's how neo pronouns also work at the same time.
It's like it's aiming for sort of like maximal inclusivity in terms of like giving people kind of like, you know, the space to do what they want with it.
Yes.
Which it is admirable, I suppose, but also you're right. Bad actors could sort of use to kind of make
and that's
fun
not
ever.
The game's fault, no. I guess. Maybe that's just how I have seen these things in the past, and I'm kind of like having a knee-jerk reaction to it. There is a sort of level of this, the paradox of intolerance, or the paradox of tolerance, where you can't be tolerant of intolerance.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no real right answer for this certain thing. I do applaud this game for allowing neo pronouns because that's not something that I've seen elsewhere, really.
Well, and also like I do like that you can pick sort of like whether the visual look of your body is going to be like, you know, feminine, masculine, or kind of non-binary. And then also when you hit puberty, you can make a selection for what is happening with sort of like your physical development that is or does or does not match that. Like you can be a woman with a penis. You can be a man with a vagina. You can sort of like, you can make selections about the way in which those things link up that again gives you sort of like it's total freedom.
It just refers to those things. Though obviously it doesn't show because you're
no.
a child
but
it's cyberpunk again.
Mm-hmm.
but not so crude about it. So that is I think in line with what we would sort of expect. It is a very uncomfortable game at times, which is really good because we're talking about things like puberty and emotions, and a lot of the times the adult characters will dismiss what you say based off of you being a child, which is very true to life as well. And some of the... Do you have any favorite characters?
Tang was the one I got really close to. I also got really close to Cal, the farmer boy.
Oh yeah, it's like I saw that model of the child and I was like, you know he's gonna be hot when he grows up.
He's so hot when he grows up. It's like, crazy. He's really the one where you go from like 15 to 16, and he goes from being like a kid to being like, whoa,
Neville Longbottom of the franchise. I ended up getting close to Tang, but keeping her as a friend. And then ended up romancing Rex, who shows up later.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Rex seems fun. Rex seems like a cool dude.
I, however, didn't realize, I don't know if it's the writing's fault or my dumbass brain's fault, that Rex is actually Polly.
Oh.
And so there's like this, there's these moments where he's like talking about how he loves his friend Nomi, right? But Nomi...
Wait, he's Polly with Nomi?
But Nomi is Ace. So I was like, sure, they like... He loves her, but it's not like the same kind of love. I think Nomi's Ace. I didn't fully, but like Nomi seemed to be like, I don't feel sexually attracted to Nomi. But like there are all these other scenes where like, and this is again maybe like that's all I'm gonna say about it. But it's like this is the Polly character, and it's like I didn't really realize that until much later. Actually, until after I read more about the game, and I was like, wait, he was.
Well, so let me take this as a springboard to then talk about what I think is the most ambitious part of the game, and I think that works the best, which is, because this is a game where you are picking your kind of daily activities, you're picking every day, like, you know, do you work in the biology lab, or do you work in the shop, or do you work in the gardens, or do you go exploring, etc. You're picking stuff, and as a result, you're both upgrading your stats, which allow you to unlock things, and also getting kind of like bespoke interactions with characters every time.
Right, yeah.
And what I think the game does do very well is that by focusing on one or two areas, you get a lot of stuff from stories related to those characters.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do skip around a little bit just to spice things up, you can get glimpses into things that are happening with other characters and other stories going on. And it does all kind of feel coherent. It did at least feel to me, I got a sense of like, okay, I kind of have a grasp of what's going on with this character's story over here just from seeing like two or three bits of it, because I can kind of perceive the through line. I could see going back and doing a second playthrough in which I focused more on them and getting more of that story as opposed to the one I'm getting over here.
Mm-hmm.
Like it did feel like the narrative threads kind of wove together in a way that made it easy to dip in and out, in a way that for a narrative game of this kind of scope with as many bespoke sort of events and as much text as this game has, it's pretty impressive that that just works mechanically.
Yeah, I think that was really interesting. I think my example of that happening was when I went to level up my organization. I got glimpses of Marx's story as well.
Yes.
And then when I went to go work construction to get points with Rex, finally met Marx's hot gay dads.
I didn't meet them.
Oh, shit. Spoiler.
No, it's okay.
This is the thing about this game is that it's like it is really hard to talk about it without getting into discovery and spoiler territory a little bit, because it is really rich and dense with discovery. What is going on here with it is that like it was very tantalizing to want to go back and fix those other things. And we keep running into this wall of being like, I want to hold off on saying why that is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I really racked my brain with how we were going to kind of structure this episode. And we can spend a little bit more time on this and then just get into... like make this a much shorter because like on the surface, this game is very much, it's also not that deep. Like when we talked about the mechanics and the puzzle solving of the game.
I don't think it needs the card game system.
The card game system ends up being really like, I mean, maybe I just got lucky because I hard spammed engineering, which unlocked in the shop a fidget spinner. And what the fidget spinner did was all of your blue cards were all wild. Not they were all wild suited, but they were all wild values and numbers.
Oh, so you just stack them and like you just play like a 9 and you like 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 or whatever?
No. They just all counted for all numbers.
Oh,
so
okay.
Anytime you put blues down, it was just always a straight flush.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Constantly.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. It was just like, oh, okay. So I just... tend to turn my brain off the whole time.
I did not get that. It was not much harder for me though. Like I will say this.
Yeah, there was also the system wherein the game would tell you how close you got to the maximum value, which was also unnecessary. But if you did exceed the goal, I liked that if you exceeded the goal so much, you got an extra point in the skill you were training mm-hmm. for that challenge. And that made me think, like, there's got to be a way to actually game this system wherein if you exceed everything, you can kind of have the perfect ending.
Possibly.
Which is sort of what's going on here, because what's happening is that this game is hinting that this child that you have this weird premonition ability, and half the time it comes true and half the time it doesn't. So, like, your dad's going to get you a birthday gift and you're going to be like, oh, I know what this is already. And you can either tell your dad that and he'd be like disappointed, be like, ugh, probably the Sikh told you, the councilwoman told you, what a stick in the mud. Or you can be like, oh, I have a secret power. But it doesn't really matter. But there are other things, where this precognition power does seem to matter. The game also opens up, even before you are 10 years old, it opens up with a scene where you're recovering from a burning house. And maybe we should have talked about this at the start of the episode.
Yeah, you open with a vision of you being rescued from a burning house by a mysterious woman with red hair.
Yes. And then you there's all these kind of hints to that happening again, or like having happened before as you're going through. And that is also really interesting as you're going through it too, being like, what is this mystery happening?
It is a loose attempt to basically make the idea that you'll replay the game for different endings into a diegetic sort of time looping thing going on around the fact that you have passed through a wormhole to get here. And it's kind of implied that by passing through the wormhole, something weird and timey is going on.
That's about that. Yeah. There's also an exploration mode where you go out and explore various parts of the island. Admittedly, I didn't do very much of that. And my settlement could have really benefited from me having done that more and be less of a brainchild, which was good. That was really compelling to me, and be like, oh fuck, I should have done more. I shouldn't have like spent so much time being selfish on my stats, and I should have probably spent more time helping around getting resources for the colony.
The issue with the going out thing, and maybe like if I did another playthrough, I probably would do a version in which I focused almost exclusively on that.
Yeah.
That one of everything was the hardest to balance, because while you're out there, every event you hit in the world is driving up your exhaustion meter. What would normally be exhaustion that you build up over like 6 months that you then have to rest for builds up over a single month. And so I kind of think
Hear me
you
out.
Would need to be
That's
like...
That's actually really good.
I think it's good.
Yeah, it's like way too good.
Because
every time you do an event, also,
oh, I see.
First off, you get like 7 stats per exploration, and then once you rest, you can choose to spend one of the days or months, I guess they're called, to rest, and then you get to filter out one of your old cards. And this is one of the coolest things of the game, wherein your deck gets thinner and thinner the more you forget your old memories. And you can kind of highly specialize in your newer memories that are typically higher valued.
Well, like everything else going on, I feel like by going out a handful of times, I got about 10% of a story that clearly exists out there.
Yeah.
And got glimpses into what very obviously would be a very rich kind of sub-narrative there for me to find if I went out and pursued it. Like the game is good at sort of like definitely feeling like it is larger than the frame of whatever you are focused on at this moment.
I'm sure that if we Google it, we could find the perfect run.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
This has to exist. And it probably has a lot of doing that really early. I know that if I talk to the kid that sneaks out, what's his name? Deese? Tank's twin? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He sneaks out. But I didn't have any bravery, so I never snuck out early. And now I'm like, fuck, I wish I'd snuck out early, kind of, because it would have been nice to have had that more of that done.
I started trying to like rapidly ramp my friendship with Deese towards the end of the game, as I was like, I don't like what's happening in this colony anymore. Maybe Deese and I need to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, there's a lot going on that is, it takes the story in a lot of different directions very fast, and it's a gripping tale, but ultimately one I found sort of not lingering with me as much as, say, Signalis.
Someone online in a review said that when they did multiple playthroughs, the problem they ran into was that the first 8 years or so were very repetitive, and then the last 2 years were where all the divergences happened. And
oh.
I would say also, like hardcore, right? In terms of like the story really splitting, right?
Yeah.
And I would say that the first 8 years were the bit where I was really into the game, and the last 2 years is when stuff kind of started getting really messy. And
wow.
I can perceive that like that structural split they're talking about, and I think a lot of my problems was sort of like the story construction. direction hinge around that pivot point.
Yeah, that's interesting. I would have thought there would be more pivot points given that there were very different crazy things happening throughout the earlier arcs of the season.
I'm not sure before the last couple of years how much you have the ability to impact the big end of year events that kind of keep setting off the next year's sort of like theme or whatever.
Okay. Interesting. Well, if you have anything else to say that's spoiler free, why don't we take a break and go take a nice hike up Mount Kilimanjaro.
Hike up Kilimanjaro?
Yeah. All the way to
the top. Come back in like a month and a half?
Possibly. I think there's a wormhole in there, though, that we can hop into and then get back real quick.
Okay.
Okay. And we'll have an ad break while we do that. And we'll be back with a visit to the Spoils Collector for even more spoiler talk.
I think this is worth it.
I think it's just going to be what we're going to have to do. All right. Bye.
We're going to read some ads.
We've all got it.
We do.
Who needs it?
Nobody.
Certainly not me.
Couldn't be.
This week's episode of Stormbuds is sponsored by hair.
Hair?
Hair.
Oh, wow.
The stuff that grows on your head.
What, they wrote a check?
I think more of a ransom note.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. It says they have my piece at... Oh, no, actually, it's not a ransom note. It's just an Amazon delivery notice. They couldn't deliver it to the station.
It's a delivery notice, but it's made out of magazine cut-up letters. That's strange.
Yeah, and dipped in blood.
Threatening.
Very threatening.
So we're sponsored by hair.
Sponsored by hair. It's the stuff that grows out of your head. Do you know what you've done with your hair?
I combed it this morning.
I did not, because again, bald.
But surely you comb your beard sometimes, right?
I do have to brush it. That's not combing it.
I suppose I always get combs and brushes mixed up, which is possibly the point of this ad.
You always do that!
I do always get combs and brushes mixed up.
That pisses me off!
Yeah, my fiance, she says, can you hand me that brush? And I hand her a comb, and then she throws it at the wall.
She throws it at the wall. It bounces off the wall, and it hits you in the eye. It stabs you in the eye, and then you fall into a hole and end up in a nowhere.
Yeah, that's how the Undertale starts.
That is exactly how Undertale starts. And hair doesn't want that to happen to you.
No.
So go buy your hair from your local Target.
They got it in the hair aisle.
They got it in the hair aisle underneath the electronics section.
Yeah.
It's in the basement.
Yep.
It's the secret basement. Go up to your local Target employees. Ask for their hair.
Ask them to go to the bathroom. When they point you to the bathrooms, you say, no, the secret bathroom.
Let's work through this situation. Hey, you're a Target employee.
Good deal. I'm a Target employee.
Fantastic.
My name is Jam.
I'm a Jam?
Call me Jam.
I will call you Jam. I'm a Target customer. My name is Rashandar.
Well, hi, Rashanda. Can I help you find something today?
Yes. Give me your hair.
Sure. Go over to the barber aisle and let me grab a clippers. And then I can cut that directly off my head. Can you get the back of my scalp there? Sure thing. You can get him in the bag. Collecting everything.
Okay,
in the bag.
Yeah. Here I go. Collecting everything in the bag. I got this bag here from Walmart.
I'm sorry. You brought a Walmart bag into the Target?
Yeah. Is that a problem?
We got a Walmart bag. No.
Why are the alarms going off?
I don't think he notices.
Why are the alarms going off?
For security.
Hello.
We need four security
Walmart
people.
Bag. Is this not a free country? Hello, sir. Hello, officer.
James, can you get him out of here? James, please.
No, hey, that's my delicate wrist. I put lotion on it. You're ruining my wrist. I need that for my modeling. Oh!
God, I need another job.
That could be you when you shop for hair at Target today. Go to target.com/hair and enter promo code STORMBALDS for... 100% off your hair today.
Yay.
Well, we're back and we are 10 years younger.
Yeah, we climbed Kilimanjaro and came back through the wormhole, and now we're 10 years younger again.
Yeah, it kind of dropped us off. I don't know how to explain it, but through the curvature of space and time itself, it's kind of more of a what's that bottle that doesn't have an opening?
Well, like a
Klein flask?
Euler flask, maybe?
I don't think it's Euler.
I think it's Klein. I think you're right.
Yeah. It's like a Klein bottle. So it just sort of folded in on itself, and we ended up 10 years younger. We're like the inner two versions of ourselves, time-wise.
Man, I'm surprised, actually. I don't think this was ever a premise of a Deep Space Nine episode, but it should have been.
Maybe they got to it in Discovery. Who knows? I have not finished Discovery, though I thought it was pretty good when I watched it, and then I just didn't choose to watch it anymore for no reason in particular, actually. I'm not being facetious.
Can't do this now, or I will talk for half an hour.
Okay. You had reasons, I guess. No, we are going to take, as we promised, a visit to the Spoils Collector. So grab your spoils from your Didym trip. We are going to... Was it? I swear to God, I said I was going to look this up the next time. Is it from the Didym? You've not done the Spoils Collector. I think it is. Because that's how you get the Pegasus, maybe?
I trust you.
Okay. Oh yeah, they're from the lock boxes. If you know what the hell I'm talking about, good on you, man, because I sure don't. We're gonna take a visit to the Spoilers Collector. You have been fully warned at this point. The ending and all of the stuff that's in this game is free game to talk starting now.
Okay, so out of the gate, I got two questions for you.
Yeah.
One, which kid died super early on?
Tammy?
Okay, mine was also Tammy. Interesting.
I think Tammy's the one that's forced to die.
Okay. But, like, I think she can survive. Oh, you can save her. The point is, on a loop, you can save her or something. Okay,
sort of.
I don't know why.
No, you can't save her on the first one. You can't. It is hard-coded that she dies, and then the game tells you at the fucking end, like, you could have saved Tammy. And the only way to do that is when you go in. This one I fucking stopped. Oh. I went to the second round, and then there was just this, like, special, like, past lives prompt. Tell Tammy about the holo projector that's going to go off and tell her not to go near it. And Tammy's like the nice kid that listens to you. And then she's like, holy shit, it didn't go off. And it's like, no, you had no chance to do that. Why did you fucking guilt me, game, into thinking I actually had a choice in this?
That's kind of disappointing, actually. I kind of thought
isn't
one...
Isn't it disappointing?
I kind of thought one kid would randomly get killed.
That would have been cool.
It's always Tammy. Okay, no,
I was kind of building my friendship with Tammy for early on, too, because she seems nice. Well, I was a little bit struck by that death, and then it was completely cheapened. Because, like, the game, in the very end of the game, there's an old version of you that shows up with a bunch of armbands on it because they went to all the fucking riot fests and festivals and got all the Live Strong bracelets, and they know everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that symbolizes, but they do. And they're like, you could have done a better job. Do you want to go back in time and fix everything? And it's like, wait, what? I just had all these, like... I had these like touching cutscenes of being like, hey, I had children with Rex and had a really fulfilling life raising them, even though I missed my dead parents, who of course died because I didn't know how to save them.
Yeah, your mom overworked herself and your dad died of fungus?
Yeah.
Okay, yep.
I think those are also pretty hard to avoid as well without the past life experience. I mean, yeah, even without the knowledge, but I think I have a feeling there's going to be some way to use your past life to save your dad in particular, because they can't cure the shimmer until he dies.
Sure, right. So yeah, okay, good point.
You're gonna go back your past life and be like, actually, this is how you cure the shimmer with your knowledge. And it's like, why? So there, it's just, it really kind of, it's telling two different stories here. It's telling the story the first playthrough that you should sort of live with the consequences of your actions and try to make the best out of bad situation to make your give your life meaning, right?
Yeah.
But then at the very end, it pulls the rug out from under you and it's like, actually, what if nothing you did matter at all and you could just have everyone have a perfect happy ending?
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, it was like, yeah, it was like 9, 9, 9, 9, 9 game, super, super great game, super great 9, super awesome. I'm saying the number 9, not doing a magpie signal. And, then it's just like, oh, 6.
Well, so
right at the end, just sort of flopped the landing so hard.
So I want to loosely describe my ending, and then we loosely describe your ending.
Yeah.
Okay. My ending. I convinced Tang to not release her genocide virus, which
Same.
Is good.
I'm supposed to let you talk.
No, it's okay. The one time I saved Scum to actually, I was like, oh, I'm at like 85 friendship. I need to use like 3 months to like get up to 90 with her and then convince her to not release the genocide virus. And then what ended up happening was that everyone in the colony was pretty unhappy with Lum?
Yeah.
Everyone was pretty unhappy with Lum, and I had a really high persuasion score. So I just went around and convinced every one of the other sort of like, you know, department heads to vote against him. And then at the end, they all just turned on him and kind of like removed him as leader.
That's so cool.
I didn't think it was. Well, I didn't think it was cool. I want to get into it. But like I convinced them all to kind of like vote against him as leader. And then Mars...
Mm-hmm.
She got appointed as the new leader of the colony.
Yeah, makes sense.
And then I lived as a farmer, and I got a farmer ending.
Yeah, we raised a bunch of children that weren't necessarily ours with Rex. I did stop the genocide virus. Parents died. Obviously Tammy was dead. Tammy's father was dead. The science teacher was dead. I'm wondering how you could save them, but maybe not. The governor was also dead. Lum ended up not getting disposed in spite of my high relationship status with Mars. I didn't really have an option. I didn't have a super high persuasion score by the end. I was leaning more into creativity. I think I'd have to load that file. It doesn't really matter. I was definitely all in on like engineering,
mm-hmm.
which ended up being great because you need that to boost your friendship with Rex. And I was like, okay, I want to be with this guy. Which was cool, but then instead of having Lum be deposed, everyone just kind of got every department just kind of got these second heads that were installed by Lum himself.
Mm-hmm.
So like half of the like things just like had these like Helio. The Helio is the name for the invading group. There's like a group in year 15 that comes in and sort of invades, and they're these like militaristic assholes. Belligerent assholes, most of them, except for Rex and Nomi. And it's very interesting how like that kind of dynamic tears apart the original friend group in a way too.
It doesn't till it doesn't. This is my problem.
Did you get close with an enemy? Because I was not close with her at all.
I was close with her. It's that like the issue is that what ends up really working and I find really interesting is the way in which everything schisms, right? You have the militaristic group who want to go out and kind of like violently tame the wilderness, and you have the folks who are like, we don't like this. We're not comfortable with this. We need to find some other way to do things. And that conflict is building and building and building, and an enemy, even one of your original kids, ends up kind of like on like the more violent, destructive side. And then all of a sudden the story wrapped up where it was like, actually, mm-hmm. instead of addressing this conflict between these two sides, what if everyone is just pissed at Lum and we all kind of like push him off as a figurehead, and then after that point everyone gets over their differences off screen and kind of is on the same side again? And I was like, that feels really unsatisfying. This felt like it was building towards possibly an eruption of violence. Like, you've got a group here with a bunch of guns and a plan to go out and conquer the wilderness, and like just based on any kind of historical analog that you can draw, this is a rapidly escalating situation that could boil over, and it didn't feel like I did meaningful work to like reconcile or directly address the actual ideological differences between the two sides.
Yeah,
they just kind of got pissed at Lum and then were like, that guy's gotta go, and once he was gone then everyone was friends again. And that was the bit where I was like, this game, I think, was pretty smart about a lot of things, like, you know, the ways in which it talked about sort of like some parts of old Earth history or the various plot lines. Like, there's a lot of small stuff in here, especially on the character level, that I think is pretty smart. So to have this sort of just feel like a big whiff at the end, where it felt like this climax got kind of dodged, that was the bit that I walked away kind of being disappointed about.
There's just a lack of commitment overall in this game to any sort of ideology that is, and you mentioned that this is just the game telling us like that, oh, capitalism is bad. But then it's like also that it's the game telling us that like the characters only think that certain characters only think that capitalism is bad. But then they have their own secret seedy backstory, which maybe I just didn't get into that much of it because I wasn't delving too much into the administrative side, or maybe it was, but like I don't fully understand what the original conflict was on this playthrough, and maybe I'm not supposed to understand everything about this game. I get it. You're supposed to do multiple playthroughs. I am just so demotivated to do that, knowing that the ending itself, or that the conflict, the choices I make end up not having any very quote unquote real consequences, because there's going to be these alternate versions of these characters, which is kind of, I guess it's a little dumb, but it's just the fact that the game is telling me two different ways that like that one, these terrible things are happening, but two, what if you could just, it's so bothersome. Like, what if you could go, like, what if you could go back and do it all over again? Does it, the game, maybe people play this game a lot more will know, like, does the game ever explain why our character can do this? Is it because of the wormhole? But like, can any character do that?
It's possibly alluded to. What I've seen of the other endings, which are, this game is not super well documented, I think in part because it is so massive. Like, I've looked into some fan wikis and stuff like that. They're very sparse, but I think they're kind of sparse because the project is so intimidating. But what I've seen in some of the other endings, like, I think you get into more stuff like that more explicitly engages with what is going on with the time looping stuff. Exactly.
Okay. This, I was a teenage exocolonist is, I don't, again, I'm like a little bit, I'm a little at this point more morbidly curious, but man, you, when you mentioned that like the first 8 years were really repetitive, I was like, kind of right. Like, it was cool at first being like, okay, just like one more day, kind of a Civ style sort of loop. And but like, then like, there's a couple of mysteries I want solved. Like in my ending, Deese was nowhere to be found.
Yep. Did he do the bomb?
He likely did the bomb. We don't know. Likely bombed the colony to let monsters in and then peaced out. We got a vision that he had a cottage house somewhere that we could have found and didn't because I didn't explore enough. So that's like something I didn't engage with. And another thing about the endings is that I only got endings for the people I had max friendships with.
Yeah, same.
So I spent a lot of time with Mars and Cal and didn't get any sort of resolution with them or with any of the adults that I wasn't particularly capable of giving gifts to.
Mm-hmm. But you still wanted to see what their future was?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I just want to know how Mars got along with not being a leader and like what happened to the colony. As you said, like what happened to the colony? Did they try and go out and do this thing? There's just so many questions that are unanswered because they didn't get exactly 100 friendship points or see these story things out, which means I'm like, that's like, a lot. So I think the only other playthrough I would want to do is just to sort of follow a guide to get everything done. And then even then it's like, well, that kind of takes the sort of the puzzle out of the game. And then I'm just kind of like going to be like, oh, year four and I fucked something up and I have to start all over again or something. Like,
I suspect that the first two or three playthroughs would probably be very interesting because if you're focusing on one to two areas each time, you're getting enough different stuff from like, okay, this time I'm going to focus on gardening. Okay, this time I'm going to focus on sciences. I'm going to focus on like probably you get enough unique stuff that way. But like by the time I was getting to like, if I got to like playthrough five or six at that point, I can really imagine like, okay, I have seen everything that every one of these locations has to offer at this
point.
Well, and also like, again, going back to the ending, like my impression of the future of the colony is that what happens is that after we install Mars as leader,
everyone
just kind of like gets over their differences and everything is okay.
And the glow season never happens again and everything's super cool.
It feels really simplistic.
Oh, how did you beat the dog in the end?
Oh, the dog at the end?
Yeah.
Oh, I had like a high enough engineering score also that I planted the trap.
Damn, that's what I did.
Oh, yeah.
The freeze trap. Because that was like the thing. Yeah, you get to like pick one of your scores because you saw the dog at the start of your vision. And you're like, oh, but I had planned for this. And I was like, no, I didn't. That was my first reaction. Like,
No, I didn't. Yeah. Like,
when did I do this? Like, why didn't the game tell me to do this?
That was kind of very, like, that would have been like a good thing to kind of like seed, like, you know, maybe back in like year like 19 or something.
Oh, that would have been cool. Like, hey, remember, like, you're getting a vision about the glow. You should probably set something here. Or like, you have to set something here. You have to do this or do one other thing. Or maybe if you don't, you just die.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably possible. Mm-hmm. But like, if you don't have any scores at all, then you just die again.
Yeah, like,
and then the person comes out to you is like, we should try that again.
There was like a colony defense score I was supposed to be incrementing, I guess. I have no idea how you're supposed to do that. My colony was like 5 defense the whole time.
That's more than mine was until the Helios showed up, and then it was really high. And I was like, you know what? Great. I don't know how to deal with this. I don't know. I was like, by the time it got really bad, we were all starving, and I wasn't getting any benefit from going out and exploring anything because my perception wasn't going up or anything for any sort of deal. And I was like, fuck it. It's just like, whoever dies, dies. I just got to get through this.
One more quibble about the ending, because I'm just thinking about this now. The thing with the Lum character is that after we voted to remove him, then Mars appointed him as her assistant, and now he's like just like seems like kind of like a harmless crazy guy who sort of just like, you know, is her assistant. And like,
put him in jail.
He's a violent fanatic. Like, that's the thing, right? It's not even like, it's not even about like what I think justice should or shouldn't be.
Yeah.
It's more generally speaking, like, this is a violent, charismatic leader who for a while there was leading the colony on a path towards doing some really bad stuff.
Yeah.
Like, just the idea that a person like that would no longer remain a threat, that it would not be a problem, that he would not have
followers.
Because
he got voted out once?
He should have followers, right? He should have other people who believe the same things as he does, who are not happy about his removal. This should be like an ongoing conflict. Like, just like something about that just really, really bugs me that it doesn't understand.
I think that's really valid. I think that's a valid complaint. I think probably the commander of the Helio army is probably the weakest sort of part of this game, which is a shame because he's in many ways the main antagonist.
Yeah.
That's stinky.
The main antagonist, unless we figure out what's going on out there on the alien planet, because
possibly
there's something
out there that is intentionally coming and killing our crops, right? Well, there's a pattern to these alien attacks in Glow Season.
And at a certain point, someone was like, yeah, we just find random ancient alien artifacts out there. And I was like, you do? I'm sorry. We aren't talking about this all the time.
Well, they are on an alien planet.
Yeah, but like,
yeah,
artifacts implies that there's other intelligent life out there.
Fair enough. Okay, I think that's good. I mean, that's going to be good enough for me to talk about this. It'll be a relatively light episode for us, but I don't mind that one bit.
I mean, like, I think this game is cool. I think that it is really ambitious, and I think that a lot of the writing is quite good, especially for how much of it there is. I think it's just, there's these frustrating parts, especially around the end, where it's like, it's good and I could see how it could be great.
Yeah. So, yeah, 7 out of 10 buds for me.
I'd call it an 8, but with some real asterisks next to it.
Okay. That's going to do it for, I suppose, the discussion of I Was a Teenage Exo-Colonist and Spoils Collection visits done. We've bought everything we needed to, and we can get out and do some of our little housekeeping. Hey, so our next stream date. What's going to work for you? Hash this out right now. We got time.
We do have time. Is going to be on a weeknight next week.
Okay. Pick one.
I am pulling up a calendar.
What we're going to do, we're going to stream. We said we were going to stream last week. Schedule, things changed. I canceled that event, but we're still going to stream Totaro's Grand Endeavor on the Stormbuds Live channel. You can follow twitch.tv/StormbudsLive. And that way you can kind of join us as we sort of experience the Totaro's Grand Endeavor questline. What's going to work for you?
I think we could do next Friday.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, let's do next Friday.
Okay. When are we going to record? Because next episode, it's going to be Totaro's Grand Endeavor, and that's going to come out that Sunday.
I think we could stream next Tuesday.
Okay, great. Let's do Tuesday. That sounds good to me. It's not that long, I don't think. I don't remember it being long, but I've been wrong before.
We'll find out.
But there's some good rewards in it, and I think it's a pretty satisfying epilogue to a lot of the chapters we experience. Not every chapter, but to a lot of them. And there are certainly other epilogues that we will talk about at some point on a different episode of Stormbuds. But that is going to do it for us again. Anything else? You can join our Discord, link in the description. All our other socials are as well. We're excited to talk about Dawn Trail next month. Dawn Trail is coming out on the 28th for early access. Have you pre-ordered your copy?
I have not pre-ordered. I probably should, because I know we're going to do it. I want to get
the bonuses. You know we're going to do it. You're going to get to it, and you want to get the bonuses. You get the earring. that will help you level up some of your classes as well.
You know, mild complaint.
What?
Anytime I get ads or anything for Dawn Trail, it never seems to include the date it's coming out. I've had no idea when that game is coming.
The 28th is early access and got it. 1st of July, maybe? Or is the release date or the 31st? I can't. Does June have a 31st? No. Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't. No. I don't think it does.
June 31st.
I have a calendar on my... Why don't I just not speculate, Jerome? Yeah, it doesn't. Okay, cool. Yeah, because June 30th is our episode of Life is Strange True Colors. I have to pick that up as well. But this was a worthwhile endeavor. I finished this pretty quickly and got through it and was able to sort of take a break from other games for a while. We could talk about our quest log, too. Shit, I didn't think about that. What's that? What else have you been doing this week? Any quest log stuff?
I saw Furiosa in theaters.
Oh.
That movie rules.
That movie rules.
I get why people are not into it in some respects. Some of the CGI is certainly more stylized than something like Fury Road, but I find the imagery striking.
Cool. Yeah, that's a big fan. I'm a big fan of Mad Max stuff. I think that's a cool one. Still on my Bellatro bullshit.
Oh, yeah?
I'm working my way up through the blue stakes now, and if you know what that means, I'm getting close to my... I want to get gold stakes on every deck. It's my mission. I'm just about done with blue stakes. That's been that. And I've also been finishing up Final Fantasy XIV, prepping for Dawn Trail, doing a lot of PvP. We did that on a stream a little bit, too. Got the outfit that I wanted from there. Getting a lot of my relics done. All sorts of stuff. I've vamped enough.
I think we're good. They know where to find us.
Listen, we did like an hour long recording of a separate secret project that's going to come out hopefully before Dawn Trail. And we're so fucking loopy at this point.
We've been talking into microphones for about 3 hours right now.
You guys have no idea what's coming. I'm just going to leave it there.
It was quite the journey you took me on.
It was quite the journey. So keep an eye out on one our socials, definitely in our Discord. I'll post it when that project's ready. But you know, this has been our episode. How many times did I say that? I'm done. I've been your host of Light, Jerome Barbatzis, and I was joined by my co-host of Light, Alexander Hambrock. Say goodbye to the buds, Alexander.
Good night.